Fraud is not only proliferating, but scammers and their schemes are becoming more sophisticated and successful as the perpetrators get better and better at exploiting your trust. Outsmarting the Scammers, Helping Seniors Fight Fraud is 99.3 County FM's effort to educate listeners on what to watch for, steps to take to avoid being scammed, and what to do if you're a victim of fraud. We partnered with the Prince Edward County Detachment of the OPP, the Prince Edward County Community Care for Seniors Association, and the Municipality of the County of Prince Edward to create this six-part documentary series. Each week, we'll explore a common type of scam, hear from victims and their families, and learn some tips on how we can protect ourselves. 99.3 County FM's radio series, Outsmarting the Scammers, Helping Seniors Fight Fraud, is funded by the Government of Canada's New Horizons for Seniors program.
According to the Canadian Fraud Centre, 42% of fraud is perpetrated through direct contact. Even though many of us are aware of today's fraud landscape, many scammers combine technology and psychology to run scams they know will tug at our heartstrings and incite an urgency to act. If you got a call, a text, or an email message from a friend or relative in need, what would you do? Lisa told us a story about her mother-in-law, Maud, who one day received an alarming call from someone saying it was her grandson. He'd been in an accident and badly needed help.
Well, last August, we received a phone call from her on a Sunday. That might be a minor detail, but it does become significant later on. She phoned, she was a little bit upset and frazzled. She's 87 years old, so sometimes she does get that mind frame when she's done something and she's not sure if it was the right thing to do or not. So she said, I need to talk to Peter. I think I did something wrong. And I said, what do you think you did wrong? Because she had phoned my phone number, so that's the first thing that sort of worried me.
Peter is her son.
Her son.
Okay.
Yeah. I called him and I said, well, what's going on? What do you think you did wrong? Well, I hear about these scammer people and I think I got scammed. I think somebody got my bank account information. I said, how did they get your information? Well, I got this call yesterday from my grandson, our son, and he said he was in a car accident and he needed this money. I'm like, whoa, slow down. I said, what did he say? He needed $6,000. He was in a car accident and he needed the money to pay for the ticket and to pay for the damages. So I gave them my account number. So my stomach just dropped because you hear, I had just been in the bank the week before and read the poster and it was textbook scammer. So I said, okay. My husband came in. He has access to her account. They have a joint account together. So he checked on his phone on the online banking app to make sure that everything was still intact, and it was. There had been no access at that point. So I said, okay, when did this happen? Thursday. I said, today is Sunday. The person she talked to said, don't call Dad.
And she listened.
And she listened.
That.
Yes. She said it sounded just like him. Just exactly.
She thought it was her grandson.
Yep. Only
saying,
grandson.
Please don't call Dad.
Don't call Dad.
You'll
don't
get
call
me in
Dad.
Trouble.
Yeah, he'll be mad.
One would assume that if you recognize the voice, it's legit. But the truth is, voices can be spoofed almost as easily as phone numbers. Using artificial intelligence, a scammer only has to capture a few words to be able to deep fake a voice that would fool even a close relative. It's that insidious and all too common.
Our son was living in Toronto, but he didn't have his car with him. She got a second follow-up phone call from, I can't remember the name, he was representing our son to follow up, to give him the information as well.
Okay, so when he said, I'm representing your son, did he say in what capacity?
I think like a legal capacity or representation of some sort. So, you know, she's gotten two phone calls saying the same thing, wanting the same information.
And somebody's a lawyer. That's going to hold some weight.
We're all no doubt feeling horror right now, but there are a lot of fortunates about Maud's story. Fortunately, she acted on her suspicion that something felt off. Fortunately, Lisa and her husband Peter were able to act quickly as Peter had access to Maud's accounts. Being that it was a Sunday, it's also fortunate that online banking doesn't take holidays, so they could find out immediately if Maud's accounts had been compromised. Peter logged in right away.
We immediately went into the online banking and transferred all the money that was in there into another account that we have to make sure it was out of that account. She has two bank accounts, two different banks. And I said, did you give them the information from the other account? No, she did. We asked her that repeatedly over the next couple of days. And she finally said, oh, maybe I did. I think I did. So again, did the same thing. There was not as much in that account, thankfully, but it was all there. But we transferred that out as well. And she does not even talk about it anymore. I don't think she even likes to remember that it happened. I was just thinking of, like, I know, like, when people get to be of a senior age, they don't want to give up their independence. So they don't want to have somebody else double-checking their banking that they're doing. But they don't want to get confused and make a mistake when they're doing it themselves. So I think that's why we had the account set up, so that we could co-sign or pay her bills on her behalf, because she's not very mobile, so that she doesn't have to go to the bank. But sometimes you need to give up a little bit of that independence. Yeah.
Lisa's strategy is potentially a good one. There are differences between setting up a joint account and a financial power of attorney. It's important to know how these mechanisms work before you use them, because there are risks and advantages to both. For example, empowering a trustee to act on a senior's behalf can be crucial when time is of the essence. Having a trusted individual attend to an account provides extra oversight and protection in case of an emergency. But you should never feel pressured to sign a power of attorney or to open a joint bank account. Carefully consider all of the options before making any decisions. What worked for Lisa and her family won't necessarily be the right choice for yours.
We used to do something with our kids when they were young. We used to have a code word. So if they had to, if somebody, like a neighbor or something, was picking them up from school, we'd give them the code word and say, so the kids all knew what it was, like ice cream or popsicle or whatever. And so they'd say, okay, I'm going home with the neighbor today. So I was thinking, you know, why couldn't grandparents do that with all their grandkids? Say, pick a word and they only know it. Don't tell your friends. Don't tell other people. It's just between us. So if you get a call like this, say, well, it's our secret word or code word. If they know it, great. If they don't, the person's going to hang up.
Mm-hmm. And do you think your mother-in-law would have remembered to do that?
I don't know. In the moment, I honestly don't know.
Anything's worth a try. And while it's easy to fall prey to one of these cons, knowing what to look for and being aware that it could happen to you are the best protection. Erin Miller from the Prince Edward County OPP is actively involved in senior fraud protection, and he concurs.
It's always a good idea to question anytime somebody's asking you for money. So we've heard often that families have a password if somebody's calling somebody and needs something. Any tip like that is a great idea. And we've also heard victims, potential victims, ask specific questions. You know, what did they give you for Christmas? What did they give you as a birthday present last year? Anytime you can get some information out of the fraudsters, they're not going to have that specific information. Having said that, we have to be careful with what we're posting on social media, because fraudsters look at that and they can use that against us. For example, if we've been on a recent trip, if we've posted, you know, too much family information and our privacy settings aren't set properly. So there are all kinds of things to consider.
In another direct contact scenario, one of our local county residents was duped by what he thought was an odd but not incomprehensible request from his brother-in-law. Moses got scammed to the tune of $1,000 via an email.
This goes back a year or so ago. I received an email, which I believed it was from my brother-in-law, and I noticed the email address was his, or certainly gave me the impression it was his. The emails said something to the effect that he was out of town, his cell phone was acting up, and he was in a little bit of a dilemma. He missed his niece's birthday, and he wanted to send her something and asked if I would be willing to purchase some gift cards.
What were you thinking?
Well, I figured, okay, he's reached out to me, you know. I knew him very well. I knew he had nieces, you know.
And how long has he been your brother-in-law?
15 years or 20 years or more. They live up in Collingwood Way. At the time, I was in Hamilton.
Were you also used to interacting via email?
Yes, we've done that from time to time.
So this wasn't unusual?
No.
Or did it strike you as unusual at all?
No. I was a little bit surprised in a mild kind of a way that he would reach out to me because I knew there were other members in his social group. But I figured, okay, he's contacted me for a reason, and I'll see if I can help
him. And you'll see if you can help him.
So I purchased some gift cards. I went to a drugstore and purchased 10 $100 Google gift cards.
Is that what he told you to do?
Yeah. He said, you know, and ideally, I'd like to gift her $1,000. She can do what she wants. She's going to college. And
now, did $1,000 seem like a lot to you?
Well, sort of, but John is relatively well off. And for me, it would be overkill, but for him, maybe not so much. And the mere fact that supposedly he forgot his niece's birthday, he wanted to make up for it.
Do you know this niece?
No, I know he has several nieces.
But you don't know her personally?
And no.
Never met her?
No. A second marriage, too, so it's...
But still within the realm of plausibility.
Yes.
How did you pay for the gift cards?
Well, I went to the drugstore. I paid with them with my credit card. And after the fact, I was a little bit amazed that maybe the clerk, knowing that I was buying $1,000 gift cards, that she might have said something. The person, John, contacted me and just asked me to scrape off the numbers on the Google cards. There's a code there. Take a picture of them and email them to him. That way he could pass them on to her.
Had you ever purchased a Google card before yourself?
No.
So you didn't know what the process was at all?
No, no.
So when he said, that's what you have to do, you thought, okay, this is the next step, correct?
Yes, right. I took a picture of them and I emailed them to him. He got back to me and said, I need some more Google cards. And I thought, well, this is odd. And I said, well, unless I can talk to you one-to-one, I'm not willing to do any more. And then I never heard of after that.
When was the moment that it clicked and you felt, I have to say no to this?
Well, just the $1,000 amount. And when they asked if I could do some more, that was the moment I thought, this is odd. I'm uncomfortable with doing it. And I figured, well, I've done as much as I'm willing to do. And that was...
The type of scam Moses experienced is all too common. We spoke to Jennifer, the manager at the Picton Giant Tiger, who painted a very concerning picture for us. Apparently, it happens all the time, so much so that they now have processes in place to protect customers. She also explained how the gift card scams typically work.
Once we sell a gift card to somebody, it's a contract between them and that gift card company. It has been more and more where people are coming in buying multiple gift cards at a time and then coming back and saying they don't work or there's no money on them. We do take the time to call the company for the customer, even though we know what the outcome's going to be. They've shared the PIN to the card with somebody and they've wiped the card clean.
For those of us who aren't that familiar with it, how does that work exactly?
So when you buy a third-party gift card, you go to a store, and there's multiple stores in Picton that sell them. You purchase it, and then you leave, and you scratch the back, and there's a code. Much like when you're shopping online, the back of your credit card will have a 3-digit code, and that is the PIN to access the funds on the card. So when somebody is being scammed, they're being told to go buy these cards to pay for the services, whether it be to fix their computer or because their grandchild needs the money because they're in trouble. Your Windows is locked. There's so many different reasons. And then once they get these gift cards, they share this PIN to get the resolution of the problem that's been proposed to them.
So who do they present the gift card to?
They end up giving it digitally, whether it be over email. We had one woman that was scammed by text. This was probably the very first person we ever had. That was almost 3 years ago. So once the scammer wipes the card clean, they tell the person that it didn't work, that the card was faulty or there was no money on it or whatever they come up with. They have a multitude of reasons. So then the senior often comes back to purchase another card. Sometimes they tell us that the first one didn't work and sometimes they don't.
Moses fortunately recognized that something wasn't quite right. When the caller asked him to go back for round two, he knew something was off and decided to talk to his wife.
And what did you do after that?
Well, I spoke to my wife and she looked at me and said, are you crazy? We didn't discuss it and all that sort of stuff that happens sometimes when you don't communicate with your spouse. And she said, I think you've been scammed. And I really felt embarrassed and all that sort of stuff. I called the OPP and let them know that I thought I had been scammed. And they sent a constable over the same day or the next day. And he took all the information and copies of the pictures that I had taken of the gift cards. And he said, well, we'll look into it. He said, I can't promise that we can do anything, but we'll do our best. The OPP has a special unit that looks after all this. So he said, I guess you feel embarrassed and vulnerable and all the rest of that sort of stuff. And I said, well, yeah. He says, that's understandable. You feel that way. But, you know, if it's any consolation to you, this happens all the time to a lot of people. So he made me sort of feel better about the experience, if he could feel better about it. And I was glad that he took time to kind of personalize it.
Unfortunately, Moses didn't get his money back. He did, however, call his brother-in-law to let him know someone was spoofing his email.
I did phone my brother-in-law, and I was able to reach him. Actually, I left a voicemail for him, and then he got back to me. And I said to him, John, you know, someone's using your email. And he says, I've had a lot of my friends call me, figuring that this was unusual, and it was a scam. He says, hopefully you weren't part of this victim. And I said, well, I was.
Has there been an impact from this fraud?
Yes. It seems to be that every other day we're getting an email or a text or a phone call from dubious things, and you're really on guard. So that impact is basically just starting saying, oh, this has to be a scam. Just hang up or don't reply. Or
have you replied? Have you been tempted at all by any phone calls that you've received?
I've certainly given an extra thought. Not really tempted per se, but enough to say in your mind, this isn't real or something like that. Not tempted to do anything, but more giving it some serious thought.
Lessons learned indeed. Hindsight is 20/20. Being scammed, no matter how much or how little money is involved, leaves us feeling vulnerable and victimized. Erin Miller reminds us of what to be aware of and shares some of the red flags that could indicate a scam. His best advice? When in doubt, take a step back. Ask questions.
Any question is the right question. I always say pump the brakes, ask the questions. Look at red flags like a sense of urgency, a sense of secrecy. Don't tell anybody, don't talk to anybody, or it's going to cost you more money. Take a few minutes, be the one in control of the information. Call your bank, call the OPP, call a loved one and ask the questions. You know, does this look like fraud? Why do you want the money? Why does it have to be now?
Jennifer from Giant Tiger echoes Aaron's advice.
If you even have a slight doubt, it's probably a scam. If it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true.
If somebody has compromised your computer and they tell you to go in to Giant Tiger and get a gift card, what is the connection?
There is never anybody going to contact you about your computer being broken. Nobody knows. It's not monitored that way.
Our guests today shared their stories in the hope that doing so will help others avoid the trouble they experienced. These are real people living in our community, and they want to help. Advice both Lisa and Moses offer in the wake of their experiences is the same as our local law enforcement tells us to do. Pump the brakes, take a step back, hang up, and call the individual or company you think it is to confirm the story before you lay out any cash. And never hesitate to ask for a second opinion. If it seems odd, don't ignore your instincts, your loved ones, the police, your bank, the stores you shop at, and the anti-fraud center are all here to help. If you've been targeted by fraud, report it to the Anti-Fraud Center immediately. I'm going to give you a second to grab a pen, perhaps, because there's a couple of numbers that might be helpful. Visit www.antifraudcenter.ca, that's antifraudcenter.ca, or by calling 1-888-495-8501, that's 1-888-495-8501. If you have been a victim of fraud, call the OPP, 1-888-310-1122. That's 1-888-310-1122. Join us next time when we'll learn about internet scams and how malicious actors target victims by masquerading as trusted brands.
99.3 County FM, your nonprofit, community, volunteer-driven radio station, is proud to provide a platform for the voices of our community. The six-part series, Outsmarting the Scammers, Helping Seniors Fight Fraud, will be available to stream in its entirety on our website at 993countyfm.ca after each episode airs. Some names of those interviewed have been changed at their request. Thank you to our 99.3 County FM production team. Scripts by Astrid Young. Interviews by Renee Wiseman-Stanners, Brenda Little, Ken Palmer, and Krista Hepburn. Narration by Wendy Mesley. Host Jim J.J. Johnson. Music by Dustin Crenna. Production by Dave Wheatley. Other production and research, Jillian Carson, Helen Morris, Gage Broderick, Craig Mills, Lorraine Wilson, and Sherry Gervin. Thank you to all the members of our community and service organizations for sharing their stories.